I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast.
You having a good week, Patrick?
I'm having an okay week. It's stressful. Holiday is happening everywhere, and I'm a marketing person, and we launched our holiday campaigns on Friday.
Oh, so you're earlier than most people with the holiday stuff because it's part of your job.
Check your email. I'm not.
What's that?
Check your email. I'm not early. I mean, everybody has already.
Oh, that's true too. And
The decision was made. It's like, holy crap! Everybody else is already doing it. We have to get ours out there now.
Yes. I gotcha. Well, I'm sorry about that, Patrick. Kobe's good. Today we are joined by EC Myers.
Gobble up these great deals, John.
Yes, gobble them up.
Now, please introduce our guests.
Yes, I will. We're going to first joined by EC Myers, and we will later be joined by Andrea Phillips. She'll be joining us a little later in the show. But they are here to talk about their series called Remade, which is over at Cereal Box. So that's what we'll be talking about in the meat of the show. EC Myers has lots of books and other things out there, including his novel Fair Coin, which won the Andre Norton Award for Young Adult Science Fiction. And we had Eugene on the show many moons ago talking about Fair Coin and that whole series for Fire. EC, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back, guys. It's I like the new intro. I haven't listened, I guess, in a while. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. Well, you know, that intro song came out of Patrick badgering me because if you listen to podcasts in our community, I have written and performed probably three or four other ones for other podcasts. And I never did one for ours. And Patrick hounded me until I finally did it. You know, the cobbler's son mm-hmm. in his shoes, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But eventually we did get it. So, you know, Eugene, why don't you tell us a little bit? And I'm going to go back and forth between calling Eugene and EC because
respond to both. As long as I know you're talking to me.
Yeah.
Well, and it's going to be easier right now because even though he's going to call you two different names, Andrea's not going to be here for like 15 minutes.
That's true. And if you say Andrea later on, I probably won't jump in.
Yeah. But for the benefit of our listeners, if he calls you EC or if he calls you Eugene, can you use two different voices?
What is my author voice? Yes.
Hold on. If you haven't figured out your author voice by now.
I'm trying to think it might be something like how Kevin Conroy switches between Bruce Wayne and Batman. And like Bruce Wayne is this like lighthearted, but which one is my secret identity and which one's the real name?
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I do the dun dun dun, because it's the super cafe from How It Should Have Ended, where it always has Batman and Superman there, and he's like, you know, I would have done a lot better.
I love those shorts. My wife and I keep quoting. There was one episode they did with Mario in it where he was trying to pretend that he was a superhero. Like he thought he was a superhero and he's hanging out with Batman and Superman. And he's like, I'm a superhero. And they're like, no, you're not. He's like, it is the same. Like, no. So my wife and I will just periodically be like, it is the same.
At work, we just brought up the episode with the Guardians of the Galaxy where Baby Groot and Batman get into it because Baby Groot keeps saying, I am Groot. Batman keeps saying, I'm Batman.
You do a really good Batman impression. Yeah, impression. You do a really good impression of an impression of Batman.
Thank you.
That's like one of those things where most people who do impressions of Shatner or most people who do impressions of Christopher Walken are doing other people's impressions of Walken. But anyway, you know,
my brother does Christopher Walken impressions all the time. But the last thing I'll say about that, John, is that my impersonation of Sean Connery got screwed up by Celebrity Jeopardy on Saturday Night Live.
Oh yeah.
Now my impression is actually of Daryl Hammond doing Sean Connery on Celebrity. It's like, I'll take Edelblum covers for $1,000.
Well, and what's funny about that is, as good of an impressionist as Daryl Hammond is, he didn't necessarily do a great like Connery, because it wasn't that close to him.
No.
It sort of became its own thing. Same thing with Will Ferrell doing Alex
and
Trebek.
That's, yeah.
It was nothing. Yeah, it was nothing like Alex Trebek.
It's an album cover, you drunken swine.
Yes, exactly. Well, Eugene, before we get to talking about Remade, which we will once Andrea joins, why don't you tell us about some of your other projects that you've worked on recently, some things that you might want our listeners to know about. Obviously, I mentioned Fair Coin and some of the books you put out, but I'm sure you got other stuff going on too. So why don't you let our listeners know a little bit about that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny when you mentioned Fair Coin. It was like, wow, it was 2012. And like, what have I done in between? Well, let's see, I had a kid. I mean, that accounts for a lot of my time these days. So in the interim, so I've got a couple of other books out besides Fair Coin and Quantum Coin, The Silence of Six and Against All Silence, which are about teenage hackers or hacktivists who try to get involved with exposing a government conspiracy. Now, this is going to be hard to believe, but involving social media being used to manipulate the outcome of a presidential election. Like, I know that's really hard to accept, but, you know, science fiction
That's science fiction right there. Yeah. I mean,
So that book, actually, The Silence of Six, came out in 2014, and Against All Silence came out 2016. So, and then it was kind of just like, it was really hard to write those books with everything that was coming out about Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks and all that stuff. It was kind of like, I'd come up with this really great plot point, and then suddenly, like, the next day I would check the news and be like, Edward Snowden steals Eugene's plot point. Because the thing that I had come up with that was so extreme was something that was actually going on.
Who was it? Who did we have on, John, that was talking about they basically wrote a story that was about a and we don't usually get very political here, but I had wrote a story about a Trump-like character becoming president.
It was Robert Sawyer.
Robert heard about that.
Yeah. He wrote like a whole book about sort of projecting that, and then it happened.
And then it happened.
Essentially.
So it's Robert J. Sawyer's fault.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty much. He's got a magic typewriter somewhere with whatever he types, like, comes true, right? But those books are my most recent novels. I've written a couple of short stories that are also set in that universe. So there's a collection of three short stories tied to The Silence of Six called 1985. And then mostly I've just got some stories and some anthologies. Two anthologies just came out, Feral Youth, edited by Sean Hutchinson, which is kind of a young adult modern take on the Canterbury Tales. It's like 10 stories that are sort of linked together. And then Behind the Song, edited by K.M. Walton, which are stories that are inspired by songs. So,
you know, can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that, obviously, when I was doing a little bit of research, and I think I just, you know, because you and I have been friends on social media for, since you were on the show like 5 years ago or whenever that was. And I saw when you posted about that initially, about that Behind the Song. So maybe I would love to hear a little more about that series as a whole and about your story in particular.
Yeah, so that Kate came up with this idea. It's songs that your stories are inspired by a song, and it could just be inspired by a feeling that the song evokes, or something around the song, or sometimes more literally based on the lyrics. And my story in particular, my story is called City Girl. It's one of, I think, two or three actual fantasy stories in this anthology of otherwise contemporary young adult fiction. So sometimes that can be a little bit off-putting when people aren't really expecting, or, you know, they don't typically read in that genre. They don't know what to expect from that story. But my story was inspired by Keane's Somewhere Only We Know. And is both the lyrics, but then also the music video of Somewhere Only We Know, which kind of the two things. The first time I heard the song was when I saw the music video like years ago, and both of them are sort of inextricably linked in my mind. And just the imagery of it, if you haven't seen the music video, it's just they're kind of walking. And as they walk, like, this, the landscape starts kind of erupting in nature, like forests spring up and just, like, you know, forest creatures that come out and things like that. And they suddenly you end up with, like, the band playing in the middle of this, like, really magical looking place. And when Kate mentioned this anthology to me, that song kind of wove itself into a story idea that I'd been thinking about for some time, which I originally thought was going to be a novel. But I hadn't quite figured out how to make it work yet. And somehow the two things kind of mashed up in my brain, and I kind of knew how to tell the story. And so then in some ways, as I worked on the story, I was able to pull in lyrics and images directly from the song. and just kind of work them together. So it was really a fascinating experience. Like, I am not as much of a music nerd as many people are. For the longest time, I only listened to like oldies and things like growing up. And then at some point I started listening to, you know, contemporary like pop music and things like that. So I'm like not very well informed with music. I have no musical talent at all, but my wife and her entire family, they play piano, they sing, you know, they compose music. So I've always been sort of the odd person out. So I thought it was going to be a little bit of a challenge to, you know, meet the criteria of the anthology, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm definitely into checking that one out. I always like that intersection of music and books like that. I just put in my queue the Nick Hornby book that he wrote about just various songs that had a lot of meaning to him. And I always love that back and forth because it seems like authors want to be musicians and musicians want to be authors. Yeah. And I always love that, you know, where those two do kind of meet up. So that's an anthology that I'm definitely interested in. But
yeah, and it was really cool because some of the events that we've had, we were able to have like live performances from some of the, because yeah, like you said, some of the authors who contributed to the anthology are actually also musicians or they have bands. And then we had like little concerts at the launch party and some of the other events that we've had. So it's great fun. I'll send you a copy. Just we'll connect on email afterwards and I'll
fantastic. I'd love that. Yeah. And it's funny how quickly time goes when it comes with music, because music is really such a marker of time in terms of periods of life. And I just saw a couple weeks ago in the blog, you know, my blog feed that I read all my different things and I have all these music like spin.com and Rolling Stone and all that. And, there was, I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar, but there's a group called Tegan and Sarah, this duo, sisters, twin sisters who are a duo, have been around for a little while. But to me, they're like a very current band. And their album, The Con, there is a sort of a tribute album that's marking the 10-year anniversary of that album. And I'm like, 10 years? that to me is like, I feel like that's an album that I was listening to a lot like a year ago, but obviously it was 10 years ago because it was when it came out. And I'm like, wow, I am old. I remember that time. You know, it's weird, but that's how music works. And I think that's why you see authors utilize music quite a bit, because obviously a lot of authors just use it as a soundtrack for their writing. Sometimes they use it as to evoke certain feelings and memories. So I think that's a great meeting of the arts with things like that. So yeah, I'm definitely into that. So very, very cool, Eugene. Okay, now we're going to move on to our next section here. Before we do that, I want to let people know, if you enjoy the show, enjoy these interviews with folks like Eugene and Andrea, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. I'd like to first thank all the people that are already our backers. It really makes a big difference to us. It helps us improve the show, get good guests, all that kind of good stuff. So for the people that are already backing us, thank you very much. For the people that aren't backing us, consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can post, you can pledge $1 a month, whatever works for you. If you get some value out of the show, if these authors help inspire your own creativity, or just you find cool books through them and through some of the recommendations that we all make, consider becoming one of our followers. It really means a lot to us. So once again, patreon.com/functionalnerds. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Patrick, why don't you go first? We'll give Eugene a minute to figure out what he's going to pick. So Patrick, do you have one ready to go?
Yes, I have one. And can you guess what it is, John? I mean, it's kind of buzzworthy. Everybody's been talking about it.
I think it's probably going to be my pick. So why don't you pick it?
Stranger Things 2.
Yes, that was going to be my pick as well, but that's okay. You go first, and then I'll join in.
So I was not able to watch it when it launched because I was at Mile High Con. And as much as I love Mile High Con and I love all the folks there and I always have such a great time, the hotel sucks when it comes to internet. So you're not going to get good internet there. You know, even my cell phone is usually a dead zone there. And as are most people's cell phones. I don't know why. It's in the middle of the tech center, so it's irony, right? But so I was able to catch up on Stranger Things 2 the following weekend, which was last weekend as we're recording this. And I loved it. It was great. You know, even the fact that they were playing the stupid animated game that I hated so much at the arcade. I hated that game. Because it was
Everyone hated that game. It was impossible.
And you always died, like, immediately. And then you'd get just a little bit further down, and then you die. And then you'd have to put more money in. And I know that they said it was like 50 cents, I think. But I want to say that in Fresno, it was a buck.
At one point, I think it was very expensive. But yeah. I feel like even at 50 cents, I feel like that might have been amongst the first of the 50-cent games. Because for a long time, it was just quarter. I feel like that
it was the first 50-cent game, I think.
If it wasn't the first, it was definitely one of the first.
I think I saw online somewhere that it was the first. But anyway.
That would not surprise me, yeah.
Anyway, I felt like, and if anybody hasn't seen it yet, you're just going to have to get over it. Because we're going to talk about it.
Yes, just skip ahead a few minutes. Because, I mean, I don't think we're going to plan on spoiling the whole series, but I'm sure some sort of spoiler may come up.
So. I felt like, especially with the Lost Sister episode, I felt like they were doing Eleven's, you know, Jedi path.
Yes.
I really did. I felt like, you know, here's the episode where they're going to tempt her with the dark side. And she doesn't go down the dark path, and she stays a Jedi.
Yeah. Now, Eugene, have you kept up with Stranger Things? Has that been a thing that you've watched?
I have not. I've been trying to tune you guys out. So I'm very into 80s, obviously pop culture. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, but I'm also very retro minded. And so people have been recommending the series to me for a real long time. And it's been on my list and I haven't gotten to it yet. I have fallen behind on almost everything. And as long as I can kind of dodge spoilers on Twitter.
Well,
No worries at all. Yeah, but you've been talking about people. I don't know any of these characters. By the time I finally get around to watching it, which will be pretty soon, I won't know. I won't remember what you're saying.
Okay. So. Well, yeah. And if you're into the 80s, it's fantastic. You know, I don't know. Have you read Ready Player One?
I have. Yeah.
So
I liked it a lot.
I feel like it's the same kind of loving touch was put on Stranger Things as was put into Ready Player One. It's like they're not trying to be sarcastic. They're not trying to be nostalgic, really. They're just kind of giving you this 80s flavor, and they do a really really good job.
I think what I watched it all, so it's my pick too, so you could put it out. It's a rare time we both picked the same thing, and I felt like season two was great, you know, just as good as season one. And the funny thing is, when season one came out, I remember they didn't promote it too strongly upon its initial release, and I remember seeing all of the ads and things about it, and I'm thinking like, that's fine, maybe I'll get to that when I get to it, but not necessarily my cup of tea, because I'm just like, I'm not into horror, so that's not my trip. And it's not, I mean, there is certainly horror in it, but it's so much more than that. And I think the reason why it works is because there's a magic to it. And with the writing and the casting and the acting, and they just do such a great job with every aspect of it that you immediately get sucked into it. And I'm not a position in life, and Eugene has a small child, so Eugene is not someone that's going to binge a whole show in a weekend. When you have kids, that's a really kind of impossible. But, you know, I watched it within a week, which is pretty good for me. I'll watch an episode a night or so. It immediately sucks you in, and you don't want to watch anything else until you get through the whole thing. And it was, if you have not watched it yet, the hype is real. It's not hype. It's really good. It's and again, I'm not a horror person, so it's not, you know, you don't have to be into horror to like this. I think especially if you were a child of the 80s, you'll definitely like it. There's lots of little, all the details are so accurate and give you a little warm fuzzy about the 80s. So that's my pick too. So Eugene, what is your pick this week then?
Is it okay to mention another podcast?
No, go for it. Of course.
No, we've heard that there is another one.
there are at least two podcasts out there. It doesn't directly compete with you guys. One thing that I've been kind of obsessed lately with is retro video games. So these are like games that obviously I grew up with, like 8-bit Nintendo and like Super Nintendo and things like that. And so there's this podcast called Retronauts. That I've been listening to, which they talk about a lot of the old games, and they often examine them, like they analyze them in a really interesting way, kind of really treating them like artwork, you know, like text, you know, and looking at how they influenced the games that came after, and even games that are out today. I listen to that a lot. They'll usually do like reviews, or they'll have like group conversations talking about your memories, because some of it's about like what do you remember about, you know, the time that you were living in when you first played these games, or if you encountered these games for the first time as an adult, like how does that change the way that you experience them and things like that. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hey, John.
Yes.
So I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but Andrea Phillips has joined the call.
Hello, Andrea.
Hello. I'm so sorry to be.
Oh, late. That's okay. Oh, just to let our listeners peek behind the curtains. I screwed up the time. I'm surprised I don't do it more or haven't done it in the past, but I messed up the time. Sometimes our authors will have time zone issues, but no, I flat out gave the wrong time at first. And so that's why Andrea is a little late. It is my fault. It is not her fault. I'm glad you're here, Andrea. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you said you've seen our pick, Stranger Things 1 and 2. You've seen Stranger Things.
No, I have not seen Stranger Things.
You have not seen them. Okay, so we tried really hard not to spoil anything because Eugene hasn't seen it either.
Yes, that's okay. Well, I think we're about finishing with that. Yeah, so Andrew,
we didn't talk about the cyborgs. We didn't talk about the Ewoks. Nothing like that happens in that show. So
how it crosses over with the Goonies,
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, kind of the pirate map. We don't talk about that. The big ship in the bay. Nothing. Yeah.
So Andrew, you know, why don't you, well, let's see, we're in the middle of picks right now. I don't know if you have a pick prepared, because maybe we could start there with you and then we'll kind of go back to and talk about Remade a bit.
I do have a pick.
Okay, what's your pick? Why don't you let our listeners know your
pick? My pick is the Korean television show Goblin, also called Guardian, the Lonely and Great God. And it is a stunning television show. It's subtitled in English, and you can get it on Drama Fever and probably a couple of other Korean TV streaming sites, of which there are a lot, it turns out. And I don't even have words to explain how amazing this show is. It's about sort of redemption and destiny, sort of multiple lives and correcting mistakes that you've made in the past. Hypothetically speaking, on a sort of surface level, it's about a young woman who can see ghosts and is destined to marry this goblin who is basically not a goblin in the D&D sense, but a sort of a god who used to be a human being some centuries ago and has been cursed with immortality in order to do a thing that becomes clear over the course of the show. And it's sweet and it's funny. Of course, there's a strong romantic element, but there are also sweet sword fights. And it's remarkably deep and meditative, because another one of the characters is a Grim Reaper. And there's a whole series of little sort of vignettes where you're seeing this character help all of these people who have died move on to their next lives and sort of face what it was that their life was in the end. It's really a brilliant show. Everybody should watch it. Everybody.
That sounds great. Now, if from what you were describing, it sounds like it's anime, but is this live action?
It's live action.
Yeah, because when you talk about goblins and mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff, and it's that sounds great. So so there's specific streaming services that just have Korean programming? Is that what you're watching it through right now?
Yes, yes. I have a subscription to Drama Fever, so I don't even get advertising anymore. But it does a lot of subtitled Korean and also Chinese television and some films as well. And I've been obsessed with Korean and Chinese television the last couple of years. Just because if you're a creator, feeding things into your brain that aren't the same things that everybody else has in their brains allows you to come up with different things than everyone else is writing.
Sure. No, because I was going to say, where did that, you know, that seems like such a specific, you know, interest. So I was going to ask where, you know, so was that part of the driving force behind seeking this stuff out? Or did you have a friend that was into this stuff? Like how did it, you know, how did you discover that?
I originally started watching Korean drama because of my brother, and I'm not sure why he started, but I suspect it's because he does watch a lot of anime, and it may have been a natural progression from that. Sure. And he started me on a show called Six Flying Dragons, which was harrowing. The one thing I should warn you about Korean drama is that very often absolutely everybody dies at the end. So just brace yourself.
So it's all written by George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I'll throw it out there, John, that a lot of cable providers, they don't like overly advertise it. But if you are in a cable environment, either, you know, Comcast, Time Warner, Dish, DirecTV, they typically have international packages that you can add on. Because I used to sell these things, you know, for my short stint in hell in a call center. I had to sell these things, and people who were in America from other countries would often call up and say, "Hey, you know, I want a Taste of Home. Do you have a Korean package?" And we did. And then they would say, "Do you have, you know," I'd have people say, "Do you have something from India?" We did. So there's usually little packages of international television that you can add on to your regular cable as well.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually grew up, like my mom would watch Korean dramas on television. Like sometimes she would get them through like the UHF stations, but now she has cable. So she's got one of those cable packages that has like two cable stations.
Yep.
And you would think that I would, you know, then also be into K-drama. But growing up, it was just TV. Like it was my mom's TV, and not much of it was subtitled at all. So she was getting it. And every now and then, like one of the period dramas would have subtitles so I could kind of see what was going on. But now it's like, oh, I should watch this, cause it's on Hulu. It's all translated. My Korean is actually really terrible. Like I can read, the language, like the alphabet, and I know some words, but my vocabulary is really bad. And, you know, despite me trying to study it in college. So I'd be reading it along with everyone else, but,
well, yeah, I've noticed Prime and Netflix both have added a lot of international TV too.
I was going to say that if you, on Netflix, I only see it if I'm watching on my laptop. Most of the time I watch on the Roku player on my TV, and it doesn't come up as easily. But if you log into the Netflix website, they'll say, look what's new this week. We have 148 new things. And 100, I'm like, 148. And when you look, it's a lot of international things that wouldn't come up if you don't watch anything like that. Typically it won't come up in your feed very much, but it's there.
Do you know what's really interesting? Drama Fever is obviously an international site, and a lot of the comments are from Brazil. So apparently Korean drama has a tremendous Brazilian audience.
Well, what my grandmother used to call her soaps, right? I know that Telemundo, for example, has a lot of those kinds of shows. I'm wondering if that is just something that's popular in South America and in South, I don't know, like just those kinds of dramas. And I know family dramas are really popular.
I don't know how South American TV is structured. One of the things I like about Korean drama in particular is that you have a season of a show and then the story is done and it's over. So you don't have the weird dynamics that come in American television from trying to see if they're going to renew for another season. They have the story at the beginning, and that's the story that they do. So the arc of the show is much, much more satisfying.
Very cool. So do you want to talk about season 27 of Supernatural now? Or
Patrick, I was just going to say that I finished watching season 3 of Dark Matter, and that's it. That's all. It didn't get renewed, and it doesn't end in a satisfying way. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's not horrible, but it's like, yeah, I will say this. It seems like with the Netflix and Amazon kind of original shows, it seems like if they do decide not to make them anymore. It seems like they are getting some warning to try to wrap it up. Whereas if your some of your network shows, especially like your Sci-Fi Channel kind of shows, Sci-Fi will just pull the plug and be like, yeah, we're not going to renew that. Sorry. we're not going to pay that storyline off. I've been burned by the Sci-Fi Channel quite a few times over the years with that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Eugene, I cut you off there. What were you going to say?
I don't remember. I was going to say something probably about Supernatural. I bailed on, I think like season 9 or beginning of season 10 or something. It was just like, wow, this is really repetitive and starting to get a little bit.
I need to remember Angels or Dicks.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. They lost me with Metatron, basically. Yes. Like that whole plot line just.
Yeah. Yeah. Metatron.
Anyway. Yeah. One day I'll get back to it because I enjoy it.
If you're trying to do Metatron, you got to remember Alan Ruckman. Is that his name? Rickman. I mean, he did a good job in Dogma. So, I hate to do it, guys, but we're running out of time and we haven't we haven't really introduced Andrea yet, and we
she
haven't
needs
really
no introduction.
Talked about yet. So John, do you want to do your intro spiel for Andrea?
I was gonna say Andrea. Is an author that's working on Remade as well. So Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and then why don't we get right into telling our listeners about Remade?
Sure. I am an author. I primarily work in alternate reality games, actually, and worked on, for example, the No Man's Sky ARG over the summer. But I'm working on Bookburners and Remade with Serial Box. Thinks writing serial fiction is super fun, and I am very excited to be here.
Awesome.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us how Remade got started? I guess now you are in the second season of it. So how does this get started? Because there's a bunch of authors working on it. And tell us how you got pulled into it and what the idea behind it is.
The showrunner, Matt Cody, I think, had the original concept and he took it to Serial Box. This sort of idea of a bunch of teenagers who are stranded and murder robots, this sort of apocalyptic landscape. And put together a pilot episode, and then we had a story summit for 3 days where all of us writers got locked into a hot room for 3 days and had to hash out what the entire season of the story would be like, what the characters were, how they were going to react to each other, what the story was actually going to be. It's actually a lot like writing a season of television, so I think, having not actually written for television. And we approach it in that same way. So each writer kind of has their own angle to shine on the greater story, and we all make our own contributions. Anyway, at the end of the story summit, we sort of slice everything up into episodes, make sure that we know what character is going to be doing what in which episode, which author is going to be writing which episode, and take it from there.
Cool. Eugene, what was your experience like in the hot room?
Well, it was fantastic. I mean, so before I started writing short fiction, I actually wanted to write for television and film. But I didn't want to move to LA and kind of pay your dues and do all that stuff. So I decided to, I kind of went into short fiction because you can do that anywhere. And if you publish, it's because your story is actually good, at least in theory. So it was kind of, it was really great to come up to become a part of a project like Remade, where it's the best of both worlds. I can still write it from wherever I happen to be, but I'm getting kind of the same creative energy and process that you get writing for television. So literally like the best of both worlds for me. I find that I really like brainstorming with other people, and it's really fascinating to see how the other four authors in the room and like the producers and the editors how they think and how they approach story and character, and we all bring something different to the project, and it's just really great. Like when we're pitching stuff, just like throwing things out there, and we usually will often preface things with, now this is probably a terrible idea, but what if, and then you kind of go with that. And so we try to leave that ego outside of the room. Like we're all there to tell a really great story in the best way possible. And I think we all make each other look really good, in the end.
One of the things I really like about collaborative writing and this particular group of people is that you do have your own sort of terrible idea that's the first thing that comes to mind. And if you're writing by yourself, that may be the idea that you go with.
Yeah.
Because it's as far as you get. But if it's a bunch of you together, then if it's a terrible idea, truly a terrible idea, somebody is going to know why and shoot it down, or maybe come up with a solution that incorporates what you were trying to get at and improves upon it until you have an actually good idea at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andrew, I was going to ask, is there particular roles that people fall into? Like, are some people just crazy wild throwing out ideas, and are other people, you know, trying to smooth those ideas over? Or is every, you know, is it just kind of more of a free for all, or do people sort of fall into kind of positions?
I feel like I'm kind of the buzzkill. Why would anyone, why would anyone build a machine that did this plot specific thing that we want to happen here? So I think I fall into this sort of engineering test role in some cases. I don't know. I feel like some people are, I don't know. Eugene, do you have any thoughts about it?
I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like, I mean, I think Matt like tends to have like really big ideas. Like,
yeah.
He definitely is always pushing us, like, let's make it like wackier. Let's make it more science fictional. Let's just really, you know, push the envelope of what we can do here. And then of course, in the rest of the group, like, we started grounded a little bit, like, well, hold on a second. Like, wait a minute, this has to actually also make sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and it's hard to kind of like to figure out like if I'm totally making this up or misunderstanding like my role in the group or whatever. Like, I feel like I sometimes do better when we actually have some outlines or we're doing our group discussion after we've kind of already started writing some things and maybe like looking at pieces of different stories and figuring out how they might fit together. Or just
I want to shout out to Eugene on the show. You are such an amazing, I want to say utility writer, but that doesn't do credit in the craftsmanship way that I'm talking about. You wind up getting stuck with really difficult things to write really often. And you do such fantastic things with it. You can make anything work.
Oh, thank you.
It's really brilliant. I enjoy working with you.
Thank you. I enjoy working with you, and I enjoy working with everyone. Like, we have a really great group. Like, this kind of project does not work if you have, you know, any weak links in the group or anybody who's like, you know, making it all about them or anything like that, you know? And I feel bad because there are a couple of, so it seems like every season there's like one person who ends up having to do a massive amount of rewriting, and it's not because of anything that they did, you know, incorrectly or whatever. It's sometimes things just look better on paper, on the whiteboard, on index cards. You know, when you start out and then you actually see the story and you're like, oh, you know, that doesn't work. Or, you know, we're constantly course correcting as the individual stories come together. And I feel this season has been really challenging because it's the middle, you know, like we have to both match up or stay consistent with what we set up before. We have to set up, things that are coming, and we still have to tell a really great story. And a complete story that happens in the middle. And we had really big ideas and had to take it in a lot of interesting directions. And then when you each come to the table and we have all these drafts that we've all written on our own, almost in a void because of the production schedule and things like that. And then you're like, oh, these don't quite match up like the way that we thought they would or that they should. And then we've kind of got to all really just start revising and figuring out how to have them fit together better. It's been a challenge, but it's such a great challenge. And Andrew's right. Like, it condenses so much of that creative process in a short period of time where, you know, on my own, I would have written like 3 or 4 drafts of this thing and got it wrong and had other people then give me feedback, and it would have taken like 2 years as opposed to like maybe 2 weeks, you know?
I was going to say, from what you guys are describing, I think the key is having good people involved, because all it takes is one person to really sour the whole thing. But from writing a novel or a short story or any kind of art form like that, so if you're working mostly in isolation, although we know authors have editors that are, you know, we know it's not a one person job, but when it's mostly one person's creative vision, there's so much responsibility to that, to making sure it all happens. Whereas it sounds like when you guys get in this room and do all the kind of planning, it seems like there's a freedom that comes with that. Would you describe it that way, Andrea?
Freedom.
what is freedom?
No. Yes.
What is freedom? No, it's funny because this is banging up against my filters and how I think about story if you're telling a story correctly, then the story is what it has to be based on your starting mm-hmm. conditions. It's I think of it in a very sort of mechanistic, deterministic way. So I guess when we're all working together, we're trying to figure out how the machine works that we've already discovered. And I don't know that freedom enters into it, because the right answer is what had to be the right answer the whole time.
No, I like that idea, because I think about a lot of the novels that I particularly enjoy, and we've spoken to many authors over the years, and some are heavy plotters, some are pantsers, as the expression goes. And I find that the kind of fiction that I tend to enjoy is generally written by heavy planners, ones that really like, and I don't know if maybe I'm connecting this wrong, but where you can sort of feel the logic to the story and resolutions, although can be surprising, make story sense. So I don't, Andrew, am I on the wrong track there, or is that kind of what you're talking about when you're talking about sort of the writing what the story
that needs? That is very much what I'm talking about. The only thing I would sort of add on to that is that you don't have to have everything plotted ahead of time, because you can go back to the beginning of the story and write in the things that make it look like you had it planned the whole time in the very last draft.
Right. Oh, sure.
And may I ask a question?
Yeah, go for it, Patrick.
What is Remade?
So Remade is about a group of teens who die and wake up in a very confusing, different world. And if you've seen the first season, if you've seen it, you know, they discover, and there's some spoilers here, but they discover that they're actually like in the future, and they have all been literally remade. So they are now kind of new people that were based on like the lives that they were. So they have their memories, but they're in like new bodies and that kind of a thing. And they're being chased by killer robots. They have some grand mission to accomplish that they're just starting to figure out, and they're navigating this world and who they are in this new life that they found themselves in, while also just trying to survive because killer robots.
And I should add, they're the only people in the world. There are no right. other people. This post-apocalyptic landscape is ruins of our own civilization, I guess, a great civilization. At some point in the distant future, everybody is gone. And one of the mysteries in season two is trying to figure out why that happened, what exactly is going on here.
And where do people go to get this?
They go to cerealbox.com? Is it just I was like, is it cerealboxpublishing.com? So cerealbox.com.
Cerealbox.com.
Yeah, and Remade season two starts on Wednesday.
And how often do you put out episodes?
They come out once a week, every Wednesday. Yeah.
Now is this audio as well?
It is.
So mm-hmm. Okay, and then because we've talked to some of the Cereal Box creators before, so it's
not only is it audio, but there's a special sort of dramatized podcast of season one that is available on a site that I've forgotten the name of right now.
Well, you can get them on iTunes now. And I've linked on it too. We're talking a little bit about that, but maybe we can send you the link so that you can put it in the show notes. So when you subscribe, I think a season is like maybe $20-something, and you get every episode downloaded to your device of choice. You can read the stories online. You can listen to them online as well. So when you subscribe, you get both the print and the audio version of them. And then they recently have kind of remade season one, the audio versions, to make them a little bit more dramatic and more in line with the sort of dramatized podcast that you might listen to.
Awesome.
And they sound phenomenal.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, this is right up our listeners' alley. Obviously, if you're someone who listens to podcasts, I feel like many of our listeners are into audiobooks and these kind of audio dramas as well. So this is right where our audience lives. So, all right, everybody, go and check that out. It's Cereal Box with an S. I should, it's not like the, not like the brain. Right. It's a play on words, everybody. That's what it is. So cereal box with an X, with an S, not an X. You wouldn't, I don't know where you'd put an X in cereal. So Andrea and Eugene, thank you for joining us today. Before we start wrapping it up though, maybe Eugene, why don't you go first? I know you spoke about some of your other projects, but maybe, I don't know if you have con appearances coming up or anything else you want to let our listeners know before we head out.
Oh, yeah, I don't have, I think I might, I'll probably be a good chance that I'll be at Dragon Con again this year. I had to skip it last year. And I might be at MAGFest. I'm still waiting to hear about that. It's just like the music and games festival. So I've been like, you can also, if, for whatever it's worth, you can also follow my channel on YouTube. Every Wednesday night I've been streaming like 8-bit Nintendo games. So you can find me there. It's youtube.com/ecmyersvids. And I invite everyone to come in and just ask me questions about anything, like my life, parenting, writing, video games, whatever. It's kind of just like an opportunity to hang out with people while I also play a video game.
How have you been playing the 8-bit video games? What kind of device have you been playing them on?
I have been playing them on the original Nintendo Entertainment System.
No way.
Yeah, I have actually a little CRT down here, and that's...
What?
Yeah, I've got a little CRT television. I've got an original 8-bit Nintendo. I mean, some people, you can go really all out and get like a high-definition modded console or something like that, but it's totally original, legit, authentic technology here.
Like where you have to take the cartridges out and blow on them if they don't
Well,
work.
You don't want to blow on them because that actually makes them worse. It's a temporary fix that will make the game worse with time. But actually in my cast on Wednesday night, actually the game glitched in the middle and I had to take it out and actually like clean it like live. So I'm like, and then I was getting like that blinking light and everything. So it's completely authentic to the 1980s experience.
I'm stunned and impressed.
Wow. I am too. Yeah, I wish someone would travel back in time and would tell my 12-year-old self, "Don't blow on the games, man. You're wrecking them."
Yep.
Well, that's very cool, Eugene. Andrew, how about you? Maybe you could tell our listeners some of the things that you have going on, whether in book form or other creative avenues or cons coming up.
I'm going to be at Confusion in Detroit in January, and that is an amazing event, by the way, and I highly encourage anyone to come who can make it. On top of that, I always have about 100 things going on, and I don't want to bore you all with a long, long list of all of the little tiny things I'm doing, but if you follow me on Twitter at @andrhia, you will see links to all of the various things that I do as I do them. And, you know, I have a blog and et cetera, et cetera. So just find me there. It'll be awesome.
Very cool. Are you going to play in the author D&D game at Confusion? I know that's become a big thing over the years, the author D&D game.
I won't, but I'm trying to find a good karaoke song.
Okay. So you're going to go the karaoke route there. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's become a big con over the past few
Carry years. On my wayward song.
Oh, that's a good one.
Nice. I was thinking more 80s style Madonna, but
that's good.
I don't know.
Papa don't preach?
Yeah, I could.
Good. I'm glad Patrick's here to point out that out. Well, thank you, Andrea and Eugene, for joining us today. Once again, they are two of the authors behind Remade, and go and check that out via Cereal Box. If you like podcasts and audiobooks and that kind of thing, I think you will dig that. So go and check it out for us this week. Once again, if you enjoy the show and enjoy interviews with creative folks like Andrea and Eugene, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything else you want to let our listeners know about before we go?
Nope.
All righty, everybody. Have a great week and we will see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.